I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com and founder of One Life Tools. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, Canada's unique podcast conversation that enriches lives, empowers careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, a career in careers and starting over at 35. After stepping away from classical music, Melissa Hughes pursued a career in journalism, then in writing and communications. She's worked as a reporter, an editor, and in a senior public relations role. After several career error corrections, Melissa sums up her career aspirations as, quote, wanting to do meaningful things with good people. I learned about Melissa from a wonderful Huffington Post article she wrote with the headline, Starting Over at 35. Welcome, Melissa Hughes, to Career Buzz.
Hi, Mark. It's nice to be with you today.
Thanks for coming in. And I know you have this interesting career now that you like. What do you like about the way your career is going these days?
So the whole meaningful work with good people mantra is really, really something that's important to me. So I'm doing a communications role with a wonderful organization, a provincial advocacy organization called Life Sciences Ontario. And I'm working with a team of about four or five people who are absolutely amazing human beings. And we're doing what I think will be really meaningful work to advance the industry in Ontario.
Nice. You mentioned communications. I think that's one of those hidden gem careers, and listeners may have no idea what that career is. Just in a nutshell, can you say, like, what do you do? What does a communications professional do?
Well, it really varies at different organizations. In my role, it's essentially trying to communicate to the public what our value add is, what the message of life sciences is in Ontario, and sort of get those key messages out to the public. So it's actually sort of a kind of journalism, like we were talking about before. It's sort of a communicating value.
So if somebody's listening and thinking, gee, I kind of like writing, you know, I'm a university graduate, I've written about 100 essays and stuff. Yeah. I mean, what are some clues that would say, gee, communications might be good for you?
Well, I think writing is the first one. You know, if you're writing and reading, so if you're, and this is, you know, we'll back up and we'll start a little younger. If you're a kid that really likes to read, if you really like to bury yourself in books, which I was. And actually, my father will remember this. He'll laugh when he hears this. But he caught me one day when I should have been practicing my violin. I was playing a tape recording of myself playing a piece. And instead of practicing, I was actually reading a book.
Good one. All right. That's pretty
very
clever.
Sneaky.
Kids get around all that practicing music.
All that practicing stuff that I actually really had to do because it was pretty intense. And then writing, you know, if you're into writing, if it comes naturally to you, if you feel good when you're writing. So me, when I'm writing, when I'm figuring out how to communicate something, I kind of lose the sense of time around me. Like I kind of, everything sort of just shuts down. And I've heard other people say that about their careers, that when they're doing something that they're really passionate about and that they really love, you just kind of lose track of time and you look up and you're like, oh, wow, an hour has gone by. So
right
those
on.
Are some key indicators, I
that,
would say.
That experience has actually got a name. It's called flow. A name was put to it by one of these positive psychology gurus. Csikszentmihalyi is his last name.
Okay.
And the book is called Flow. It was from the 1990s, but it's an awesome book. And it's all about this sense of you lose track of time because you're in the flow.
You're in the groove.
And I think what I've seen from career management stories that I've heard, when that's such a big clue. If somebody tells me, gee, I lose track of time when I'm writing or when I'm doing carpentry or whatever, it's like, oh, that's an important clue for career happiness.
Right.
Right. And you just said it yourself.
Yeah.
For writing. So let's just get the what happened before everything changed at 35. You started off, you mentioned music, and mm-hmm. that was, I think, an earlier career aspiration.
Yes.
So you know, when you were a kid, you thought, gee, when I grow up, I'm going to be a concert musician?
Yeah,
was that the idea?
Yeah, I thought I really wanted to be a concert violinist. I saw Midori, who's a very famous violinist, play the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto at Roy Thompson Hall. And my father also plays the violin, so that inspired me. And so I think I saw that concert when I was quite young. I was would have been about 7 or 8 years old. And I thought, I'm going home and I'm going to practice until my fingers bleed. And so that was sort of my thing from about age. I started when I was 5 and a half. And then until I stopped taking lessons when I was about 16 or 17.
So there was a turning point here. and something happened, and then writing and other things came up. So what happened? What was the turning point?
A couple things. First thing was that it was getting quite intense in terms of the number of hours a day that I was practicing. So they were wanting, my teacher was wanting, 4 or 5 hours a day was standard, and he was wanting more than that. And I kind of felt like I was hitting a wall. I wasn't getting the results that I wanted, and that additional time commitment. So this is a time at your life when you're a teenager and you're in high school, and I'd started at a new school and I met friends that I liked. And, I started to feel a little bit like cloistered, a little antisocial. You know, my friend would come and throw rocks at my window and say, "Come on, Melissa, come outside and play." You know, like it was a significant commitment. And I started to get a bit gun shy about, the concept of it not working out. So if I put all this effort in, I go to university for music, and then it doesn't work out. The two other things happened. I started to get very nervous, so I started to get a lot of anxiety around performances. And I did have a performance where I kind of had a bit of a mind blank, kind of similar to when a pitcher develops the yips. So that freaked me out, and it was hard for me to get back up there and go back out there. And then the other thing that happened was a kind of realization that I had something to say, not bigger to say, but something that was more fulsome, something that I couldn't communicate with music.
So interesting. Like these shifts, I call them clues. You know, I'm always listening to people's stories and trying to figure out how can we listen to people's career change stories, see what happens, and you hear a clue like you've just said. There's a few clues, right? The sense of performance, and you weren't comfortable with that. And then this other kind of feeling that there's something bigger to say that you can't say through music. Those are like internal clues.
Yeah.
And people ignore them at their peril. And I know we're going to get to some other clues later on in your story, but let's just pick up on that clue. You know, clues often lead people to take inspired actions to change, to at least to explore other avenues before they make change. So what was the turning point there that led you into the world of writing?
So yeah, I was thinking about what else, you know, what do I like to do? And so what we had talked about, the earlier clues about I'm reading a book when I should be practicing. And also a friend of mine, we had run a little, sort of a silly little neighborhood publication, little newspaper that we did. And so that was something that we did when we were younger as fun, like just as we did a little radio show, we did a little newspaper. And so I kind of started to think journalism, journalism might be something that I would be interested in. I was also very interested in creative writing. I think when I was that age, sort of in grade 10, grade 11, I was a lot more pragmatic than I am now. Which is sort of
usually
the other way around. And so I thought, well, creative writing, I'll never get a job doing that. So I thought journalism, I could be a reporter. So that's how the shift kind of happened.
So I know you did go and study journalism, and journalism has changed dramatically. We've had a few journalists on Career Buzz, and there's so many stories there. I just read even in this morning's paper, a bunch of people got laid off in London, Ontario so there's been a lot of movement and change, obviously, because of the way we take in news and information these days. So, well, how did it work, first of all, in your journalism career, before things changed yet again?
Yeah. And this is something that I think we're going to talk about and come back to, but it's this concept of course correction, right? So this concept that, you're trying something and you don't get it quite right, so you try something else. Some people would just stick with it and be miserable, but I thought I would try something else. So what happened was I went through journalism school, and in journalism school, I started to feel like I might be kind of out of place, but I soldiered on. And then when I got my first job, and so I had an internship at the London Free Press as a reporter, and then I went to work.
Did you go and study in London, or where did you
No, study? I worked, sorry, I studied at Carleton University.
Carleton, who has a journalism program.
Yeah, yeah, and then a fantastic journalism program, I might add. And highly recommended.
And then what, you got a job at the London Free Press?
I did. So it was very competitive, but I got a summer internship there and I got my feet wet there. I'd been doing freelance reporting throughout school as well to help support myself. But that was my first taste of hard news.
Was that internship paid or unpaid?
It was paid, absolutely. Oh. Would never have touched it if it wasn't. Yeah. And so then I went to a newspaper. I was living with my family. I went back home for a bit and they're up in Barrie. And so I worked for the Barrie Examiner for about a year and a half, just as a daily beat reporter. And it was an interesting experience, and I got a lot of valuable experience out of it. But what I started to feel, and it wasn't even so much maybe my experience in Barrie, but it was my experience overall of journalism, of school and all the places that I worked and all the assignments I did cumulatively, started to feel like it just wasn't the right place for me, that I wasn't surrounded by the kind of environment that I want to be in. And that's no chip or slag on reporters. A lot of my close friends are reporters, and I still do freelance writing. So it's more about the environment that you're in.
So something then shifted from journalism into communications. Mm-hmm. Now, what was that turning point?
I think the turning point for me was realizing that, you know, I could take my skills and I could use them for good in the world, but I didn't have to be in such a competitive environment. It was also, I must say, a difficult environment to work in as a woman at the time. As a young woman, I felt that it was particularly difficult at times in terms of, you know, some of the challenges that you get in a competitive environment, in a very male-dominated environment. Again, no chip on anybody there. Not a specific experience or person, just an overall feeling that maybe I didn't quite belong there.
So, like moving into communications, mm-hmm. there's something better. You can use your skills in a better way. Deploy.
Yeah.
I like to use this word deploy. Redeploy your skills, right? Because it's a scary prospect to reinvent yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And people use that word, and I think that's not helpful. But redeploy. I've got skills. I can pick them up and move them somewhere else that's related.
Totally. And so that's what I did. I was really lucky. I stumbled almost right away into a media relations job at York University, just working with absolutely fantastic people. And this really showed me the value of science communication. So this is when I started to get really interested. And I'd always been interested in science. It was never something that I excelled in school, but I'd always had a huge interest in it. And so this is when I started to get face-to-face, one-on-one contact with researchers and people doing really, really important and fascinating research. And there was nothing I loved more than to kind of bury myself into a research paper and then turn it into something that's translatable, that is relatable to the public.
So, Melissa, let's lead up to the big change, right? That article that I saw, and if listeners want to check it out, you could just look up your name. I think Melissa Hughes, Huffington Post, you'll find it. So you found yourself in a situation, and what was so, I think, courageous in the article was that it wasn't just a career story. It was a career and personal story. And you kind of laid it all out for us. So what happened? What was the lead up? What happened before the change?
You know, it's interesting to talk about what precipitates change. You know, it's kind of like a shift in pressure that sort of slowly builds, and you can feel it. I could feel in my body, in my soul, that something wasn't right, and it was cumulative. It wasn't one day. It wasn't one incident. It wasn't one thing. It was sitting down in the huge house that a much bigger home than I wanted, a much bigger mortgage than I wanted, and looking around, as I wrote in the article, looking across the street at this beautiful little home, kind of home I would have liked to live in, being torn down to make room for a McMansion, essentially. And just thinking, sitting there trying to work on my novel, I'm writer's block, and just thinking, what am I doing with my life? Who am I? Where am I? And in that moment of frustration was when I wrote that. And I didn't write that piece for other people. I mean, of course, as a writer, when you write, you're always thinking about, you're communicating again. But I went into that flow that you talk about, and everything just went away. And I wrote that. I didn't edit it much. I wrote that like in one fell swoop. And everything in there is sort of my, how I felt, which was just that I'd reached a breaking point and I could not go in good conscience to myself and to the people that I love who care about me. I could not go any further.
You know, in careers, there's this idea of chaos theory of careers. One of the experts, this guy, Jim Bright, he talks about, you know, there's no such thing as stability. He says everything is in a state of shift. It's just that there's slow shift and fast shift. Yeah. And what you've just described is that there was a slow shift. You said cumulative. Mm-hmm. You said shift in pressure. And this is like the idea, things look stable, you know, you have a stable job, you have a stable relationship, you have a stable home, and it looks from the outside that it's stable, but really there's slow shift happening that finally hits something, and then the fast shift happens,
yes.
Right? And it, for you, it was not just professional, it was personal,
it was personal
also.
As well.
So, I mean, I think listeners would be interested, like a whole... Everything, you know, your whole everything is shifting, and you're in a relationship, as you write in the article, mm-hmm. and it wasn't just stepping away from what you were doing at work. It was completely stepping away. How was that?
It was very difficult, I won't lie. It was extremely scary. I had the support of my family, my parents, who are extremely supportive of me and what I do, and some very close friends of mine. People in my wider social circle didn't really get it. It was
like, hey, Melissa's got this great life, a great job, a great house, and great relationship. Is she nuts?
Is she nuts? And I had especially only girlfriends say to me, what are you doing, man? Like, you're 35. I was 35 at the time. And it's, if you want to have kids, good luck to you. You're going to have to find somebody else and all this. And I just said, whoa. You know, the most important thing is my happiness and the happiness of the people who are in my life right now, not some theoretical life that, you know, a lot of people have everything. They have a husband or a wife or a partner. They have a committed relationship that they think is stable. They have a home. They have the dream job. They have the car. They have everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's this concept, going back to what you were saying, of flux. You actually don't know that you have those things, and you have no idea of how close, and I don't mean to be morbid, but it's true. You have no idea of how close you are to losing those things. Those things can be taken away from you in an instant through no fault of your own. So my trajectory and my goal in life is to always stay mindful of being present, being in the moment, and doing what's right for me at that given moment.
It's tough to do, you know. I mean, theoretically, that sounds good, and you've probably described a situation that many listeners can relate to. Sometimes things aren't going right, and how do you find that point where, you know, I'm in the moment, and this moment is actually kind of crappy, but you know what? I'm looking at it in the larger frame, and there's other good things, and I don't want to chuck it all,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so there's this balance point where you say, you know, maybe it's a frequency thing, and you have to have a number of those points. But in your case, how do you make that distinction between this is a moment within a larger pretty good thing, or this is not good enough at all?
Well, I can only speak for myself, because different people obviously have different ways of evaluating situations and emotionally responding to situations. For me, it's not a logical thing. It's 100% a feeling. So the one person that you can't lie to is yourself. And I think all people who are creatives, who are artists, whose work resonates with others, I think what they hit on is some sort of truth, a deep truth in themselves. And other people respond to that truth. And I think that's what happened in the piece. I didn't expect 20,000 people, or I don't even know how, 12,000 people read it in one day, and it continues to be read and shared. I didn't expect that kind of response, but I hit on that truth, the truth that I didn't want to speak to myself, that I was terrified of, that I had set myself up in a situation and now I need to get out, and how am I going to do that? And my whole life was swirling around me. So for me, it was just a feeling inside. It's kind of like, it comes up in the moments when you're alone. It comes up when you're just waking up in the morning, or when you're just about to go to sleep. It comes up when you're in the shower, when your mind is at rest, and it just pops up, and it's something that you have to push down. If you feel like you're pushing down, if you feel like you're sublimating, you're pushing down, that's when you know something's wrong. You got to act.
Great. I think that's great advice, and a lot of people will relate to that. So how did you do it? What happened?
So I did give myself a little bit of space. So what I've learned to do with big decisions is to give myself options and space. So it's not the kind of thing where you say, okay, well, I've made the decision and this is it. What it was for me was more, I'd made the decision, but I gave myself some wiggle room with a few different methods that I use to take myself temporarily out of the situation and have some mental space, some emotional space. And I think a lot of people call that taking a break, or, you know, and I did that in a number of different ways, but it was especially important for me because I had the support of my family, and they were able to help me to get out of that situation temporarily until I had, took me a few weeks.
Thanks for sharing that story. I think it's quite dramatic. And we're almost out of time. I wish we had another half an hour to talk about this. In a nutshell, if I could ask you, now that you've gone through a bunch of twists and turns in your own career, error corrections, as we've said, what's one thing you can share with listeners about making those good choices, both personally and professionally?
Do what you love in every aspect of your life. Follow your heart. You know, and it sounds like cheesy advice or hackneyed advice, but it's just so true. Follow what you, find what you love, find the people that you love, surround yourself with what you love, and get rid of the negative things in your life.
Melissa Hughes, thanks so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
It's great to be here.
I'm Mark Franklin, and you're listening to the Career Buzz podcast. Career Buzz is brought to you by Career Cycles. Take inspired action toward making well-informed career and life choices. Go to careercycles.com to learn about professional one-on-one career management programs using a story listening approach to career counseling. If you're a helping professional looking to scale up career management, visit onelifetools.com to learn about the Who You Are Matters game and online storyteller. Executive coach, author, entrepreneur, and educator David Bowman has helped thousands of people find more productive and fulfilling careers. He's founder and chairman of TTG Consultants, a Los Angeles-based human capital consulting firm. They specialize in the management of corporate and career change and transition, and his clients have included companies like CBS, Disney, Lucasfilm, 20th Century Fox, Sears, 7-Up, and Sony. David is co-author of a book, How Do I Find the Right Job? Ask the Expert. David also enjoys an avocation of acting on TV series, including stints on popular shows like The Young and the Restless and Dynasty, among others. David Bowman, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you.
You're doing a lot of work with, not only with individuals, but especially in organizations, right, where many of us have careers. And it's interesting to notice now, I think, especially with the millennial generation, there's something about career development in organizations that becomes really important because people want to know, you know, what is the career path inside this organization and where might I go? And if they don't have an answer to that question, they're more than likely going to leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now, what are you seeing in terms of career development inside organizations?
You know, you hear it all the time, Mark. I hate my job. You look at the statistics, and, you know, 60 to 70% of the population is unhappy in their job. How can we ever get productive if these statistics are true? So how do we make people happier? How do we make people engaged in their work so that they will stay? Well, there's a lot of different ways to do that, of course, compensation being one of them. But another one is assessment, making sure you got the right people in the right job. And that has to do with assessing them either before they join the company or after. Part of career development is human resources has got to train managers to look at what the behavior, look at the what the productivity figures are of the people who are working for them. And if there's someone that they see that isn't productive, doesn't really enjoy their job, isn't really engaged, doesn't really enjoy coming in on Monday morning, and oh my God, it's Friday, thank God it's Friday. You know, you've heard it from so many people. If you're not really loving what you're doing, get out of there or get another job in the same company. Be happy, be engaged in what you're doing. And the only way to do that, really, is to do some assessment at somewhere, either at the front end or along the way, to make sure that people's interests are being satisfied and to make sure that they're using their skills in the right areas and they're also their needs are being met. Psychologists will tell you if your needs aren't being met, you're going to go into stress. So this assessment stuff really is so important to keep people's needs satisfied, to keep using their strengths in the right area, and make sure that they're interested in what they're doing. And in so many instances, this just doesn't happen. That, to me, is career development in the best sense of the word.
Right on. Now, you've used the word assessment, and it seems to me people get started, you know, whatever happens on the front end, and that's a question, happens, and then there you are employed, and after 6 or 12 months, you start to realize, hey, I'm not so happy doing what I'm doing. I'm interested in human resources, or I'm interested in finance. It's this idea of career exploration and gaining support from one's manager. And tell me if you see this. It looks like that conversation. It's not so much a formal assessment as it is a conversation that doesn't happen, and that somehow managers aren't great at having those conversations, or people themselves aren't great at having the courage or having the even the idea to have that career conversation at work. So it seems to me that's a piece of the puzzle. What do you see about the effectiveness of these career conversations at work?
Well, you're right. the problem, Mark, with those conversations is that in many cases, the supervisor, the boss, doesn't want to lose the person, because if they do, they're going to have to go through the training process of somebody new. So, you know, they just, let's not have that conversation at all. There's an old adage, you know, take control of your career. It's a business, and run it like a business. It really is a business. Your career is a business. So it's up to the individual, not the boss, not the supervisor, not even HR, not even human resources. It's up to the individual to take control of their career and do what they've got to do.
Yeah.
You know, assess yourself. Go to human resources. Say, look, I'm not pleased with what I'm doing. I'd like to do something else. Can you give me some personal assessment? There are a lot of instruments out there to really help me decide where I should be, and then help me get into that department or that area of the company. Human resources is there to help. Individuals should go there and talk to these people. In many cases, the boss may not be the right one, because the boss is going to say, oh, shut up and go back to work.
Yeah, or doesn't want to lose that person, right?
That's,
I mean,
right.
That would be
That's
a loss.
Right.
But, it,
right.
you know, it's.
You've got to train somebody new.
Well, yeah, and it's like sub-optimizing the system, you know. It would be better for this person to go and be happier in another department inside this organization,
right.
But if I lose them, that's bad for me.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's some training and some kind of mindset shifting that needs to happen.
You bet.
I spoke to one career expert on Career Buzz, and I asked her what the balance she felt was between the individual's responsibility for his or her career versus the organization. She said 70-30, 70 employee, 30 employer. What's your take on that figure?
No, I don't think that would be nice if it occurred. But listen, careers are a business. You know, I mean, if you owned a shop, it's your responsibility. Are you going to turn your career over to somebody else to run? And would you turn your shop over to somebody else to run? I don't think so. You are in charge of your career. Your career results in income to you, just like a shop owner. A shop owner owns a shop that creates revenue. Well, you get revenue from the company you're working for. So it's a business. And you don't turn it over to someone else.
It sounds like you're going for the 100% me, 0% employer.
Well, that's right. Now, it's nice if the company provides some services, but it's not the company's responsibility. The company is running a business too. And yes, it's always good to improve the employees, and many companies do that, and that's probably a very wise investment.
Right on.
Some companies don't. And it's really not the company's responsibility to do that. It's nice when they do, and probably there's a return on investment when they do it. But it's really not their responsibility, because they're running their own business that either you produce or you don't.
Yes. What's one thing you can share with listeners about something that you've learned personally from your own story about making good choices in career and in life?
Figure out what you love to do and do it. Don't do the stuff that somebody else tells you to do. Do your own assessment. Do your own looking within. What is it that you really love to do? One way to do it is to figure out what you think about when you're on a highway, when you're on a freeway, when you're sitting in traffic. Where does your mind wander? That's probably where you're going to be happiest. But the point is, be happy. Be pleased with what you do. Enjoy it. When you get up on Monday morning, say, gosh, you know, I have the privilege of going to work. I love doing that. And there is no such thing as, thank God it's Friday.
Thanks so much, David Bowman.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Career Buzz podcast. Find us on iTunes or visit careercycles.com/radio to subscribe and download past episodes. Get inspiring career stories full of twists and turns, actionable ideas from career experts, and new ideas to empower your own career in life.